Dear Dharma friends, we have come to the next part of our mindfulness for young adults session. Actually, here we are discussing one of the suttas available in the Sutta Pitaka, that is in the Sutta Nipata, that is actually one book of Kuddaka Nikaya. You know, there are several parts available for Sutta Pitaka, and that is one of the one basket, among the three baskets, we can say. So, in this sutta, actually, Buddha emphasized the value of secluded practice. And it is mentioned in the commentary that there are several categories of enlightenment is available, that is, the Supreme Buddhahood or the Sammasambuddha, and then the Paccheka Buddha, where one becomes enlightened, self-enlightened, but he doesn't have the capacity to teach in detail so that another person also can attain the same level of understanding. And that is called Paccheka Buddha. And then the Sravaka Buddha, where one becomes a follower of Sammasambuddha, and then one also trying to understand the Buddha's teaching, and similarly, one is trying to explain others as well. It depends on the person's individual capacity. So there are maybe disciples who has kind of a very good capacity to explain, and some others don't have that much of a capacity. So it depends on the individual. Anyway, they also may be able to attain the same understanding where one is able to completely uproot various defilements. So in this sutta, what we call as Khagga Visana Sutta, the idea is very much related to a simile. You know, there are rhinoceros and they only have one single horn, and that is quite steady and strong. And therefore, Buddha mentioned, like a rhinoceros horn, that one can lead a secluded life and can practice his teaching. So therefore, in the good old days, there are monks, ascetics, who are leading a very secluded life, and they are trying their best to attain some understanding. So this was some of the common practice during the Buddha's time. And even later centuries, some monks were there and who are living alone, practicing alone, and trying to achieve the enlightenment. Now, in this sutta, Rhinoceros Sutta, Rhinoceros Horn Sutta, actually we have discussed a couple of verses. And now we have come to another two verses. Those are interconnected. And the first verse talking about an association, companionship. And the other also talking about the companionship. The first one talks about the possibility of having a good companion. And if one is able to have such good companion, to maintain that relationship, to continue that relationship, because that friend is a good friend, a worthy friend. So therefore, Buddha recommends to continue with that companionship. On the other hand, if you understand that there is no such companionship, there is no such friend that is suitable for me, then Buddha recommends try to lead a secluded life, be alone. So there is a beautiful story behind these two verses. It is available in the commentary, and it is mentioned that during the old days, there was another Buddha called Mahakassapa or Kassapa Buddha. And during that time, there were two monks. They were practicing well, but they couldn't attain enlightenment. They couldn't understand any of the, say, path fruition. And so anyway, they were practicing diligently. And ultimately, they passed away and born in the heavenly realm. And after that, after the Kassapa Buddha has passed away, So they too have reappeared from heavenly realm to the human realm. So one was born as a prince, and another one was born to the prince advisor's wife. So that means he is actually born as the son of king's advisor. Now they were born on the same day, and they were started to grow together, and they become very good friends. The prince and the king's advisor's son. Now they two are good friends. And they thought that they are having a good companionship and a good friendship. And they are actually discussing about themselves and what are the skills that they want to develop. And the king's advisor's son was quite intelligent, and he said to the prince that we better find out some understanding. We need to get some understanding about our lives, and we need to understand some deep qualities, spiritual aspects. So let's go and search for the truth. And once we have some understanding, and again some understanding about various other teachings as well, then we can come back to the kingdom, and we can rule the country, because you are the heir to the throne. Now the prince also agreed to this, and they both went away, and they started to practice, in the sense that they are going after various skills, and they are learning from various teachers. So likewise they start to grow, and one time they have noticed that there are some Acheka Buddhas are coming to the village, are visiting the village, and the villagers are quite happy about them, and they start to offer them food and drinks and all the necessary requisites. So these young two people have noticed these Acheka Buddhas, and they felt that these people are quite special. These Acheka Buddhas are quite special. Because the villagers, even though they sometimes are poor, they are ready to give whatever the things they have, and they quite respect these people. So they are referring the Acheka Buddhas. And these young people, actually, once they notice these Acheka Buddhas, so they become quite happy about them, and they thought they may have something good to learn. They may know some skills. They may know some important things that we can approach and learn. So once the villagers have gone away after offering the food, so these two young people approached the Acheka Buddhas. And after approaching them, so they put the question. So we think that you have something to learn, and we like to learn. We are in search of something deeper. Can you share your knowledge with us? Can you teach us? Then the Acheka Buddhas mentioned, we can, of course, but you also have to ordain. You also have to leave aside the lay life. You also have to wear these kinds of robes. If you are ready to do that, then we can teach. So these two young people are ready to do that, because they are in search of something deep. So they also went forth. And after that, what happened? So Acheka Buddhas actually taught something, but these two young people also are quite potential people, and they started to practice. And the Acheka Buddhas advised that you need to be secluded. You can't do it together. You need to live separately now. Even though you two are friends, you should have separate apartments, or we can say kutis. You can say cells, where you have some private secluded life. So after hearing that advice, they started to have two separate kutis, separate lodgings, and they start to practice. And one thing is that the person, the monk, who is the son of the advisor, king's advisor, he got some concentration. After the practice, short practice, he was able to have some concentration. And the other one, the prince, that monk prince, he couldn't have any of that. But anyway, he was not happy about that. Now, he tried something, but couldn't achieve anything. No concentration at all. There is no any happiness at all. Now he become unhappy about monk's life, and he came to the advisor's son, this monk, and he come and complain that I can't do this, and I am not happy about this. So likewise, he is now, you know, explaining his unhappiness to his friend. Then, by the way, advisor's son. So that monk actually was a very wise person. So he again encouraged this prince, again and again encouraged. Again, so he went away and started to practice. Still not happy, not successful. Again came back. Again the wise monk advising him. Again he's going back to the kuti, again trying to practice. So likewise, this is happening again and again. So every time the prince is not happy and he's coming and asking from the wise monk. So he is also now become a little desperate about the prince situation. He felt that I should be alone. This person coming and again disturbing me. I need to be alone. So what he did was he left the place where he was dwelling, and he went away to the forest. Now, another time, the prince monk came to see the friend. And after that, he saw that the temple was empty. His friend has gone away. There is no any message. He can't find him. So now, at this point, the prince was thinking. The prince monk was thinking. So he was a friend of mine, and I am fairly a higher person, in the sense that he is the prince and I am the king going to be. So he should have some respect towards me. He should have at least keep a message for me. He has made kind of a change in his mind, and he was thinking, I should not depend on this person. I should have some courage to live alone. I should have some courage to manage my own problems, to find solutions to my own problems. I should not depend on every time on another person. So that actually disturbs my own welfare. So the prince is now thinking. Now he too is a monk. Now after thinking that, so he actually becomes somewhat energetic, because he now has an opportunity to find a solution by himself. Because sometimes when we are always depending on someone else, so we are not using our own skills. We always quickly go to someone and ask some help. Again, going to someone and ask some help. So this actually keeps ourselves underestimated, and we are not allowing our skills to develop, because we are always dependent. But now what happened, the friend has gone away. Now he is simply alone. Now he has to somehow survive. Now only his eyes get open. Now he is thinking how to do this. I should face my own problems. I should practice diligently. I should practice my own way. And he started to practice more and more now, because he found some seclusion, there is no one to ask from. And he too is a person who has actually practiced many years during the Kassapa Buddha's time. So he had that potential. And after the diligent practice, he was able to attain Paccheka Buddhahood. And then the previous monk, the other monk, who left the place and went to the forest, he too has found a very good place. He too become quite secluded, and he has no one to bother him now. He has no one to disturb. So he too is a wise person with a good caliber coming from the Kassapa Buddha's time. And he too got a very good opportunity to practice. As a result of the practice, he too become a Paccheka Buddha. And both of them have attained. Now they have uttered these two verses according to the commentary. So what these two verses are telling, the first one, Sache labeta nipakang sahayang saddhin charang sadhu vihara dhirang. Sadhu vihari dhirang. Abhipuya sabbani parissayani chareya tenat mano satima. So the translation given by Bhikkhu Bodhi, if one should find a judicious companion, a fellow wanderer of good behavior, resolute, having overcome all obstacles, one should live with him, satisfied and mindful. Now this is a kind of a situation where, say, someone is trying to lead a very good spiritual life and you find that there's another person also have the same kind of a motive. And he is also ready to practice diligently. And therefore, this is a kind of a good combination. And you can share your views, you can share your troubles, you can get some advice. And he is also diligently practicing. I am also ready to diligently practice. So they are helping each other. The situation is very good. So here the advice is, so just continue the situation. Just continue this companionship. And on the other hand, the other verse talks something different. Noche labheta nipakang sahayang saddhin charang sadhu vihari dhirang. Rajava rattang vijitang pahaya eko chare matanga ranyeva rabu. Now this talks something different. So it says like, but if one does not find a judicious companion, a fellow wanderer of good behavior, resolute, like a king who has abandoned a conquered realm, one should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. Actually here it is not really a rhinoceros horn. It's actually a eko chare matanga ranyeva nagu. So here it's like a secluded elephant. One has to live alone. And the point here is that you couldn't find a good friend. You couldn't find a good companion. So if you couldn't find a good companion, so rather than getting to be with some fools, some foolish people, try to be alone. So there's something interesting to learn in a way. Because sometimes there may be some understanding in yourself, but among the close crowd, probably you don't have someone to associate. And if you are going to associate someone who is not with something, say some same caliber or same skills, same kind of understanding, probably you also might get on to some sort of a downfall. And if one is able to find a good companion, definitely we can continue with such relationship. But if not, the best choice is mentioned in the second verse. Better you kind of doing it alone. Now, there are several points that we have to consider here. Rajava rattang ujitam pahai. So this is a very interesting phrase mentioned in this verse. And this is not only applicable to this particular place, in the sense to this verse. This is a very interesting phrase. Actually, throughout our practice, we have to use. Rajava rattang ujitam pahaya. So this means, with all struggle, with all effort, with all endeavor, assume that someone is able to conquer a kingdom. Assume that it was a real war and there were enemies and there's a real huge battle went on. And ultimately the king was able to capture, say, his kingdom, or he was able to protect his kingdom. So after that, how about he simply leave the kingdom? So will a king would do that? So this is an interesting point. So typically what happens is, if a king is attacked by an enemy king, so he is there to start to fight, and the two kingdoms may start to fight. Ultimately, assume that someone would win. And once one king has won the battle, so he may capture the other person, might kill him, might say imprison him, and the other kingdom also belongs to this king. So this is how it is typically going on. But the difference here is that even though after the victory, rather than he is enjoying further and further, rather than he is trying to enjoy senses and have luxuries and to have more power, now this king has done the complete opposite. He simply has left the kingdom. So, in a way, this is fairly related to the practice. You know, in the Buddha's teaching, there's a very interesting point where you are asked to develop various skills. You are asked to develop various qualities. And once you are developed those qualities, and we should not stagnate there, rather you have to further develop the qualities. You have to further develop the wisdom. And once you reach another level, probably you may have to drop certain previous qualities, what you have already gained, what you have already achieved. Because in order to further your practice, in order to further refine your practice, so this current situation is somewhat gross. It's not suitable. So without leaving aside the present situation, the present qualities, you can't go to the next stage. So it's a matter of using the present stage as a stepping stone to go to another stage or to a higher state. And once you reach to that higher state, and after being there for some time, and probably you may understand, okay, this is also somewhat gross. I need to go to another level. I need to go to a more refined level. So you have to drop this state as well. So likewise, you are using kind of a ladder. As you are going more and more to the upper direction, you have to leave or let go the lower rungs. Then only you can go up. At the beginning, you may be holding a lower rung, using which you may climb up. But in order to further climb up, you need to leave aside or let go of the lower rungs. Then only you will be able to go further and further up. So similarly, what it was useful to us during one of the stages might have to leave aside in order to go to the next stage. And once you are there, there may be certain skills, certain qualities. In order to go to the next stage, you have to leave aside this current stage. So likewise, there's a beautiful analogy here mentioned with the kings leaving aside of his kingdom. So if you are too bounded to the kingdom, now in here the king, if he is too bounded to the kingdom, he is so greedy towards the kingdom and all the luxuries, he may simply stagnate there, simply enjoy those senses, and he may die at the same thing. But there may be a situation that there is a kind of a danger. There may be a danger to his own life. Or maybe there may be something important to achieve rather than simply leading this kingdom. So there may be various reasons. On such situation, the king should be brave enough to leave the kingdom and go alone, leave it completely. So similarly, in the practice also, if you consider, say, samatha practice, if one attained the first jhana, so if you are not able to leave aside the first jhana, you can't attain the second jhana. Because the second jhana is more refined, more sublime, we can say, more refined than the first jhana. So without leaving aside the first jhana, you cannot attain second jhana. The first jhana has 5 jhana factors, and the second jhana has 3 jhana factors. And you have to drop 2 jhana factors. You have to leave 2 jhana factors. Then only you would be able to attain the second jhana. And if you want to further practice, if you want to further go into the, third jhana, you have to further refine. Actually, just to give you more information, say the second jhana has rupture as one of the good qualities, one of the jhana factor. And the one would have to leave aside in order to attain the third jhana. Actually, what you have to drop is rupture. And what you gain is more refined kind of a happiness, contentment, which is available in the third jhana. So, in order to attain third jhana, which is more refined and more mature, you have to leave certain qualities which is available in the second jhana. And if you have to attain the fourth jhana, which is more equanimous, you have to leave the happiness available in the third jhana. So you can see, if you have to progress, you have to leave aside certain qualities that you have already accomplished. So it is a kind of a situation that you struggle hard, you strive hard in order to develop certain qualities. But you can't go further if you are not ready to leave aside those qualities. Then only you would be able to come to the next level. And there are situations, for example, one is able to achieve some kind of a concentration. So that concentration is something blissful. But if you are so attached to this blissful concentration, you may not be able to develop wisdom. Now, if you have to develop wisdom, you have to drop the concentration. You have to make it shallow. You have to leave it aside. And you have to make use of that concentration in order to investigate various phenomena. Then it is having kind of a utility value. It is not something that you can always possess. You can't bound to it. You can't attach to the concentration. You should understand it is only having kind of a utility value. So you should use this concentration as a tool in order to further enhance your wisdom. So now we are using the concentration to further investigate various phenomena again and again, and using which now you are improving your wisdom. And once the wisdom is developing more and more, you may have to further leave the concentration. Because now you understand, a yogi may understand, it is possible to maintain more wisdom, and that actually enables the mind to have kind of a clarity. It is not a deeper concentration, but rather a clarity of mind is available. And it is achieved because of the understanding, because of the wisdom. It may not be extremely blissful like before in the concentration state, but it is more mature and it is based on the wisdom. Like in the samatha practice, the fourth jhana is more mature than the third jhana. Likewise, as we are growing further and further, so the qualities become more refined. Similarly, in the wisdom aspect also, so the mind become more and more wiser. And in order to achieve that, you have to even drop certain qualities which you valued a lot some, say, months ago, some years ago. So therefore, Buddha's teaching actually is a kind of a gradual teaching, explains us in a kind of a gradual achievement, where one has to drop certain qualities in order to go to the next quality or to the next level. So on such situation, one has to have some kind of attitude of letting go, rather than holding, rather than grasping. One have to develop an attitude of letting go, sometimes called technically as patinissaggaanupassana. So you are ready to let go of. You are ready to leave aside. You are ready to drop. Not to grasp, not to hold. But this is a kind of a different path in a way. So typically what people want is to have more and more, to possess more and more. So that is the general approach. But here, Buddha talks in a different angle where you have achieved something. But if you have to go beyond, you have to leave it aside. So the path is based on, therefore, on letting go. So one have to have a different attitude, that is the letting go attitude. Rather than holding, rather than grasping, now the mind is attuned towards the letting go. So this Rajava Rattang Vijitam Pahaya explains that quality very beautifully. Because having a victory is not an easy thing. So this king may have went through a lot of battles and a lot of hardships in order to win the battle, in order to have the victory in this kingdom. But if he have to progress, he have to leave the kingdom. So similarly, a yogi also may have strived hard and he has learned a lot of say sacrifices in order to practice many things. He has spent many hours in order to achieve concentration, etc. But unless you are not ready to, unless you are leaving it aside, unless you are using it as a utility, as a tool, you can't go to the higher levels. So that is something that we can learn from these two verses, especially from this term, the analogy between the king. And with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon, and now I open the session for questions.
Abhisar Bhante, currently there are 7 questions. Just a small announcement. If you're new to the program and you want to be part of our mailing list, you can send us a message with your email address. Or you can just send us an email directly. I'll put our email address on the chat anyway. Question number one, general question. Dear Bhante, there are a wide variety of Buddhist schools and monasteries in the Western world visible to an English-speaking practitioner. From Bhante's knowledge, is there any prominent institution which aligns with the mindfulness practice of Nisarnavanaya Monastery? I recall Bhante mentioning about Bhikkhu Bodhi in the US and Amaravati Monastery in the UK during past sessions. Would Bhante recommend to listen to Bhikkhu Bodhi or Amaravati Dhamma talks as a supplement to English sermons? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Difficult question. Actually, English Dhamma sermons... Bhikkhu Bodhi is more a kind of a scholar, and he has done a lot of translations, and don't know whether he has more Dhamma sermons related to the practice. Maybe he has. And on the other hand, Amaravati, on the other hand, is more oriented towards the practice. And coming from the Achancha lineage, and there were teachers like Ajahn Sumedho, or now called as Luangpo Sumedho, and there are actually very good things to learn. And the teaching is very interesting, and the way he presents is very interesting. Actually, for me, it was quite inspiring. Actually, I come across Ajahn Sumedho's books while I was doing my A-levels, that means in 89 or 90s. So it was quite inspiring to me. And I then followed more and more his books. And even Now I still appreciate a lot of his teachings, like the books, Four Noble Truths, The Way It Is, Chitta Viveka, Mindfulness, and likewise. So he has done very interesting books, and those are very useful. So therefore, I prefer Ajahn Sumedho, because he presents things very interestingly, and he talks more in the practical sense, and therefore that is something I can recommend. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 7. This one is mindful sitting. Theravan Saranai Swami once said, "When I'm doing sitting meditation, more often I experience disappearing of the breath at some stage each time, leading to a kind of emptiness. However, from that point on, various thoughts start to arise like a vacuum, gets filled by other things easily. I try to remind myself no self nature, anatta, and sometimes that works. Thoughts go away and back to emptiness. I recall in the recent Mahakottika Sutta Deshana, it says that that don't invite more things or prapancha when 6 entities have been empty. Also, it's noted in Sakka Panya Sutta that if happiness that you experience doesn't create more thoughts or vitakka vichara, such happiness is what Lord Buddha recommended. If so, if I am to keep going back to thoughts after going to emptiness, or a happiness, that means there's something that I'm not following right. Your kind advice is much appreciated. Much merit there on Saturday." That's the end.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting question. So once we are able to achieve a kind of an emptiness where the mind is not associating anything, mind is enjoying some amount of freedom. So that is something at the first stages we need to protect. We have to appreciate it. We have to develop it. Develop in the sense we should be able to maintain such state for a considerable period of time. Say, I typically say about maximum 45 minutes. And after that, actually, the further enhancement of this stage means that we have to shallow that concentration and we have to allow it to break. Now we can actually apply that theory, what we have learned today. Rajava Rattam Vijitam Pahaya. So now you have gained this emptiness through your lot of practice, your lot of effort. But in order to enhance this situation, you have to leave it aside. Rather than enjoying that, rather than sort of attached to that state, that sort of emptiness, you have to leave aside that and see how it is going to break. So in order to see how it is going to break, you have to allow it to break. Rather than holding it, rather than attached to it, now you let it break. And then you can recognize what are the causes for it to break. Why is it breaking? Why the mind is going and again attached to various signs and perceptions, various marks. So what are the causes behind this whole process? So that is where we come across some deeper understanding which is explained in certain other suttas, like in the Mahavedala Sutta, Venerable Mahasariputta mentioned, Rago ko avso nimitta karano. Doso nimitta karano, moho nimitta karano. Where the lust is a cause of making signs. Hatred is a cause of making signs. Delusion is a cause of making signs in the mind. Now, if you consider kind of carefully, if you observe your mind, probably you may understand how various signs are going to appear in the mind. What are the reasons? Suppose you have a child and you love him. And time to time, you get certain mental images of him to your mind. So because you are attached to him, because it is your son. He is your son. And you have certain mental images again and again appear on your mind. And that actually had the cause as some kind of a lobe, some amount of attachment. It doesn't mean that you have to be rude to your son or you have to ignore your son. It is not what I'm talking here. Rather, how the mind gets occupied. You know, the mind is very much like a clean sheet. So why various stains come and occupy the mind, occupy this clean sheet? So this is where we have to recognize. So when we are able to recognize this greed, this attachment, this desire, then we can, rather than promoting those desires and rather than becoming a victim of those desires, we can recognize those desires and let them go. So this has to be done very carefully and with patience. It's not that you are sort of trying to be sort of angry with your loved ones, or you going to be hate your loved ones. This is not the point. Rather, you have to keep the mind more clean, and such clean mind may give you a better perspective when to interact, when to put your hand, when to take some action, and when to retreat. So this is something that we have to learn with the practice and with some practical exercises. Exercises may come in our own life, and we don't need to go after those exercises. But with our life, so there are various opportunities may arise, various exercises may arise, incidents may happen. So during those incidents, we can see our mind, we can examine our mind, how the mind is going to react. Is it impulsively reacting? So is the mind again and again thinking about those, say, whatever the incidents? Are those incidents making a self, prepare a self, create a self, an individual? So that is something that we have to investigate in our own life. So likewise, so achieving of emptiness is not the main thing. That is also a kind of a milestone in our practice. But using that emptiness to recognize various defilements, various attachments, various desires, various entanglements in our mind is the important thing. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 7. This is about mindful walking. Dear Bande, I have been practicing mindfulness for some time. I could walk mindfully 10 to 12 steps. In my sitting practice, I can stay with the body awareness. At the beginning, when I am walking, I know I am walking with a glimpse of mindfulness. If this continues for 10 steps, then I might say I have established mindfulness on walking. If the mind goes to an outside object, I could see it without overly reactions sometimes. I could get some understanding of glimpse of mindfulness, satimatra, and then how it develops to sati. I have followed mindfulness training program recently organized by Nisarnavanya. My question is, what does it mean by samma sati, and is it different to sati? I appreciate your kind explanation. Thanks. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, samma sati is a broader term. We have to start with sati matra, or simply we can say as bare attention, where you have to keep some attention on something happening in the present moment. So that is where we can begin. And as we continue with that practice, as we enhance that practice, so we come across various levels of mindfulness. Say, for example, you are beginning with the body, for example. Say, while walking, you are trying to keep your attention. While breathing, you are trying to keep your attention. Say, when the abdomen rising and falling, you are trying to keep attention. So this is how you are trying to establish mindfulness. And further you continue, probably you may be able to recognize various element characteristics. So this is another refined level of mindfulness. And then probably you may be able to examine various feeling tones, happy, pleasurable, painful, equanimous, various kinds of feelings you may be able to examine. So there's another level of mindfulness. And probably you may be able to even recognize various, say, moods or emotions in your mind. So there's another level of mindfulness. Now you can see the mindfulness is growing. It is enhancing and it is growing across various fields. And then probably you may come across it as an individual quality in the sense that there is some quality called mindfulness and it is available in the mind. And on certain occasions, it is very powerful. And on certain other occasions, it is not that powerful. So likewise, you may understand the presence and absence of the mindfulness. So that is another level. And as you are more and more improving yourself, then you can come across the mindfulness where you are using mindfulness to enhance certain enlightenment factors. So that what we call as bodhjanga, enlightenment factors. That is called sati sambodhjanga. So you went through a fair amount of practice. You went through various other qualities. You recognized various other qualities as well. And after recognition and went through a fair amount of developing wisdom, now your practice is attuned towards the Nibbana, attuned towards recognizing various defilements. Now you are well focused on, say, developing yourself, developing your life, according to the Buddha's teaching and more become more spiritual, something like that. Now, Sammasati is even beyond that, where sati becomes a path factor. Now you are developing mindfulness with more kind of a seclusion in the sense, more in a relaxed manner, and you know how to maintain it, and it becomes kind of an effortless kind of mindfulness. And again, it is based on some dispassion. And again, it is based on the letting go. So therefore, Sammasati, we can say, is the kind of crux of the mindfulness practice. And it has a long path. So immediately, therefore, we can't talk of Sammasati. And Sammasati also has different structures Buddha has mentioned. And actually, Sammasati, in one sense, it is talks about the samatha practice. Sorry, Sammasati in one sense talks about the development of the mindfulness with the four foundations of mindfulness, satipatthana. And on the other hand, as you are further enhancing that practice, so you are getting more onto effortless kind of mindfulness practice. And that is where the bodhjangas, the enlightenment factors, are emphasizing. So likewise, it is a kind of a growing or evolving quality. And there's a difference in the typical sati matra or bare attention and the sammasati. Yes.
Question number 4 of 7. This one has two parts. It's got mind for walking and sitting, but both have, I guess, the same question. So I'll read both out. Dear Venerable Sir, these days, I practice mindful walking inside the house using a carpeted path 20 to 25 steps in length. During the initial 5 to 10 rounds, I can keep my attention on the soles of the left and right foot consecutively. I slowly note left and right when I feel the foot touching the ground. After about 5 rounds, my mind slips away to various thoughts. Suddenly, I find myself no longer with the walking process and try to focus on the sensations again. This happens multiple times, and overall, I seem to put a lot of effort to keep my mind focusing on the walking process continuously. When I am with the walking process, the state of mind is relaxed, but when it starts slipping away, it is more or less frustration and agitation. My sitting practice is mindfulness on the breath. I can feel the in-breath and out-breath, and I start noting in and out. I feel relaxed when focusing on the breath. after a few minutes, on the breath, after a few minutes, I can feel the full breath, how the intensity grows from nothing to gushing wind and then dwindling down as a cycle. I can stay like this for about 10 minutes and then my mind starts to be distracted with thoughts. This is similar to the walking process. I feel irritated when my mind gets easily distracted. Dear Venerable Sir, my whole intention is practicing these two simple techniques, and I don't know the reason why my mind slips away so easily. Physically, I am relaxed, well prepared mentally to do the practice. Calm and quiet environment, no other issues. And I don't know why the mind slips away without any real reason. Thank you for your advice. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think actually you need to balance our efforts, because the effort is one of the crucial factors in our practice. So if we are putting too much effort, so that also can cause agitation in the mind and restlessness in the mind. So balancing effort is quite important. So if you recognize, okay, now you are slowly, gradually improving your mindfulness, mind becomes somewhat tamed, restrained. In such situation, you have to loosen the effort and you have to let it happen. You allow the mindfulness and this samadhi, the concentration, wisdom to grow by themselves. And you are not doing too much manipulation. You are not trying to control anything. And you allow things to happen rather than you trying to control. So likewise, you have to little loosen the grip. Then probably mind might settle. Otherwise, if you are trying to too much, control the situation and again putting too much effort, then that also become kind of a distraction, and that too much effort is a cause of restlessness. Atipaggahitam viriyam uddacchanu patitam samadhissa paripantu. So likewise, it is mentioned in the Dhamma. So if you are putting too much effort, it causes restlessness in the mind and it is a hindrance to the concentration. So this is one area that you need to look into. On the other hand, if you know that mind has distracted, so on that situation, you need to understand the mindfulness is intact. There is no harm to the mindfulness. And you are with the wrong notion. Every time, mind should remain on the primary object. So that is true to some extent during our early stages of the practice. But later, once we gain some amount of confidence, once we were able to develop some amount of qualities, skills, after that, we don't need to stick to the primary object. Then we have to allow the mind to wander. That wandering mind helps us to understand the nature of the mind or the habits of the mind. What are the salient defilements or the crucial defilements that our mind is subjected to? So in order to recognize that behavior, those habits, personality traits, we need to allow the mind to wander. By observing the mind's behavior, then only we would be able to understand those, what are the shortcomings available in the mind. So therefore, at that time, the wandering becomes some sort of a tool to understand the behavior of the mind, the qualities of the mind, the shortcomings of the mind. Therefore, don't think that understanding that mind has distracted is something bad. Rather, it is something helpful. And if you are able to understand that the mind has distracted and where it has gone, where it has lodged into, then you are very well aware. The mindfulness is not broken. Mindfulness is continuing. But the object has changed. No harm. So therefore, you got to little understand that point as well. Okay.
Question number 5 of 7. This one is walking mindfulness. Dear Venerable Bhante, I focus on the soles of my foot during the walking practice. During the last walking session, after about two rounds of naming left, right, and getting ready, I started feeling the touch of my heel on the hard wooden floor and then the pressure upwards from the floor due to my weight. The pressure transferred around the outside edge of the foot and just below the little toe, which was the first one which touched the ground. Gradually, pressure transferred across the sole towards the ball of the foot, while toes touched the ground and one after the other, ring toe, middle toe, long toe, and finally the big toe. The big toe then pushed the body, taking the weight completely, transferring to the other leg for a similar pattern. After 5 to 6 full rounds of continuous mindful walking, I started getting more details on this process, such as how the sole and toes touch the ground, push and swell partly against the floor due to weight, cold and warm side of toes, how they come out from the floor with the lift of the foot, intensity of the impact, etc. A lot of information I have never imagined. After about 15 to 20 minutes of walking, these details started fading away, and afterwards I could only feel the impact of the foot on the ground and the pressure upwards, some cold and hot sensations as coming from the lower part of my body or foot. I could not pinpoint from where they were coming or the place. I could walk like this for another 20 to 30 minutes. Sometimes the mind wandered off, which I knew by not feeling these sensations, and then realized that I was on thoughts. Once this realization comes, I started feeling the walking process again. Impact of the foot on the ground, some cold and hot sensations, etc. So I could confirm the mind came back to walking naturally. This is the experience and reflection of my 1 hour walking practice. Thank you, Bhante. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think no harm. So you are able to notice all these movements and how the weight transfer from one to the other. And these are some valid observations, actually. So we don't need to control the body behavior. So we simply allow it to walk as it like and according to its preferred speed. And again, we are keeping our attention to the touching places, touching points, and trying to recognize various characteristics. And if you are using any knocking, you can avoid it now, because to some extent now the mindfulness has developed and you can see without any knotting, without any labeling, you are able to do it. So I think you can continue without any problem. And on the other hand, Chatu, I am getting little disturbance through the rain. I hope that I got the question properly.
Can you hear me when I'm talking? We can hear you well.
You can hear me well, right?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Bhante, we have two more questions. They're short ones, but we're sort of out of time. Is it okay?
Yeah, we can continue.
Okay. Question number 6 of 7, general question. Dear Bhante, if there is no request yet, I would like to check if Allagadupama Sutta can be considered for the next Dhamma Talk series. If Bhante has anything already decided, we can use this later. I remain at your disposal. Thank you. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, we'll consider. Maybe Chamila can make a note on this and put an email so that we can consider that. Yeah.
Question number 7. This is the last one. General question. Theravan Saranai Samin once said, I have a question from today's Dhamma sermon. The more I listen to Dhamma and practice mindfulness, I feel more and more drawn to it and this path. However, I have a fear that if I do keep practicing, will this affect my bond with my kids and family? How can I find a balanced path without going into the path of being alone like a rhinoceros horn? Many thanks for your guidance, Bhante. These sessions are really beneficial, Theravan Saranai.
Yeah, I think so. This is the area that, in a way, we have to carefully handle. So the rhinoceros horn sutta is more emphasizing about the secluded practice, and therefore I have to honestly tell that, so I can't hide it. But it doesn't mean that I'm encouraging everyone to become monks. Anyway, how to balance the homely life and the practice. This is something in a way challenging. And on the other hand, the homely environment sometimes provide us some, conducive support also to our practice. Because, you know, it is not that having a completely secluded life helps us to understand various defilements in our mind or various shortcomings in ourselves. But in order to understand various shortcomings in ourselves, we have to deal with others. We have to move with others. And we have to face various challenges. So that only actually helps us to understand how the mind is reacting. Is it getting impulsive? Or is it getting really distracted? Am I getting really, angry? Or somewhat frustrated? So all these are, in a way, quite challenging, and those challenges are abundant in the family life. And even in the monk's life, there are a lot of challenges. Now, I mean, there are a lot of tasks, there are a lot of duties, and there are certain sort of protocols to follow. So likewise, that is also challenging. So it is... So it depends on how we are approaching both sides, and there are many monks who are not practicing. So that is also the other part. Once you become a monk, if you think that everything is available and everything is now assured, and already you are enlightened, so that is a wrong perception, because there are a lot of things to do, because just wearing the robe does not mean that we are enlightened beings or we are already developed people. Rather, the monk's life also has a lot of challenges, and we have to be fairly realistic and honestly look at our own selves, how the mind is reacting, so what are the shortcomings. And these are, in a way, common to both areas, either a lay life or a monk's life. So all these situations are common. So that's why Buddha mentioned that his teaching is for four categories of people, for four groups of people: monks and nuns, lay women and lay men. Upasaka, Upasika, Bhikkhu, Bhikkhuni, Bhikkhu, Bhikkhuni, Upasaka, Upasika. So all these four groups are the followers of the Buddha. So I don't know. I mean, it depends on the situation. And if you can manage as a layman with all the duties, and you can manage continuing your life, still keeping the practice, so that is also an ideal situation. Because there are many challenging situations, there are many opportunities to recognize various desires, feelings, shortcomings in ourselves. And on the other hand, in the monk's life, also that such opportunities available. So it depends on the person, as far as I can say. So we individually have to strive, or individually have to make use of the opportunity, and we can't guarantee that every time becoming a monk is the best solution.
So that ends our questions today, and we're going over time anyway, so I'll finish up. Firstly, I'd like to thank Bhante and pass on our merits for giving up valuable time and advice for this program. Also to the people seen and unseen participating and helping out. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, there would be no program. Theruvan Sannai.
Yeah, Theruvan Sannai. Sukhi Hotu.